And it doesn't matter whether you're a Republican or a Democrat. If you commit mortgage fraud in this country, we're going to come after you.
Well, so long as you're a Democrat and not the Republican president of the United States.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
That's why.
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
No, it ain't.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
Yes, I am. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is the broadcast as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA and on dozens of other fine affiliate stations on both the airwaves and the internets around the country and the world, blanketing planet Earth. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me. From bradblog.com. Thank you very much for joining us today for another thrilling edition of the Bradcast. While we were off last week, Donald Trump attempted to up the ante in his war against the Federal Reserve and its chairman, Jerome Powell, who Trump himself appointed to the role back during the first Trump term in 2017, no matter what Trump has said since about Joe Biden having appointed Powell. Hi, Des.
Hi.
He's up in that war against Powell for not lowering the interest rates fast enough for Trump by now purporting to fire one of the Fed's governors, Lisa Cook, the first and so far only black woman appointed as a Federal Reserve governor in the Fed's history. Trump's pretext for firing her was allegations that she had committed mortgage fraud, which, coincidentally, as it turns out, the Trump administration has also alleged that Trump's other perceived political enemies, New York Attorney General Letitia James and California U.S. Senator Adam Schiff, also seem to have committed and need to be federally investigated for.
Wow, what a striking coincidence.
I know, right? So, fancy that. Three perceived political enemies of Donald Trump, two of them black women, are alleged to have, after years and years, been found to have committed mortgage fraud somehow. Now, to be clear, none of them have actually been charged with mortgage fraud or anything, much less convicted of it. But Trump is claiming that all three have committed some sort of heinous crimes that must be investigated by the Department of Justice and that would allow him to fire Lisa Cook as a Federal Reserve governor and, critically, name her replacement to the board himself. Not so coincidentally, as you may recall, Trump himself was actually charged and convicted of financial fraud last year in New York State by, yes, New York Attorney General Letitia James. In his case, he was actually found guilty after a complete trial, and he was slapped with about $500 million in penalties, which he is now appealing. But in this case, three perceived political enemies of Donald Trump all suddenly being alleged to have committed mortgage fraud, and all, it seems, based on allegations that were suddenly discovered, suddenly came to light by the very MAGA Trump-appointed head of the Federal Housing Finance Agency, or the US FHFA. Now, if it sounds too absurd to believe, well, it's even more absurd, much more than that, as we will discuss shortly with the LA Times Pulitzer Prize-winning investigative financial journalist and business columnist Michael Hiltzik, who joins us today. But first, House Republicans voted on Wednesday to establish a new subcommittee to reinvestigate the January 6, 2021 attack on the U.S. Capitol. The attack, that insurrection, according to a bipartisan majority vote of U.S. senators, was in fact incited by Donald Trump himself. The vote to that end took place at the end of an impeachment trial in the U.S. Senate, Trump's second impeachment, for his incitement of the January 6th insurrection. He was found guilty of that, not by enough votes to remove him from office at the time, but by a majority of the Senate, 57 to 43.
He was found guilty by a majority of the Senate.
But now GOP lawmakers in the House want to reopen that matter. Okay. You sure you want to do that, guys? Republican lawmakers slipped a resolution into a rule on the U.S. House floor that would establish the new subcommittee, according to the Washington Post, just before air today. The paper reports the subcommittee is likely to be headed by Congressman Barry Loudermilk, Republican of Georgia. Now, if you have ever heard his name, it probably has to do with the fact that he was called himself as a witness by the first U.S. House Committee investigating January 6th that publicly investigated the insurrection. Loudermilk had led a tour of the U.S. Capitol complex the day before the January 6th attack on January 5th, 2021, when the Capitol was actually closed at the time to such tours amid the COVID pandemic. Participants in his tour reportedly took photos of stairwells and security checkpoints and hallways that are not typically of interest to most Capitol tourists. At least one person from that tour that night, that the night before the riot that Barry Loudermilk held, had at least one of them had marched to the Capitol on January 6th and recorded a video with threatening language directed at Democratic lawmakers the next day. The original January 6th committee, the real one, asked Loudermilk to testify about all of that, suggesting that the tour may have served as, quote, reconnaissance for what happened the next day. Loudermilk, however, refused to do so, and now Barry Loudermilk will lead up the this new supposed House investigation into January 6th. Republicans have complained that the previous probe was biased against Donald Trump, who, as the paper notes, has repeatedly denied that he lost the 2020 election to Joe Biden. That despite any evidence to support that claim. The resolution would establish a select committee under the House Judiciary Committee with a total of 8 members to be appointed by House Speaker Mike Johnson, and not more than 3 to be appointed, quote, in consultation with the Democratic minority. Not sure exactly what that means. Does that mean there will be any Democrats on the committee at all? I believe by law there's got to be. In the case of the original January 6th select committee, Republicans appointed their own members to the committee, but Democrats, who held the House majority at the time, rejected 2 of them. Since they were likely to be called as witnesses in the hearing itself. Republicans then, in response, withdrew all of their submitted members. Nonetheless, Democrats subsequently invited 2 Republicans, Congresswoman Liz Cheney and Congressman Adam Kinzinger, to sit on that bipartisan committee, which released its final damning report unanimously. The new committee is, quote, authorized and directed to conduct a full and complete investigation of the events on January 6th. Again, you sure you guys really want to do that? I don't know that they do. The subcommittee, according to GOP House Speaker Mike Johnson, is intended to, quote, uncover the full truth. Don't laugh. The full truth that is owed to the American people, adding, quote, House Republicans remain intent on delivering the answers that House Democrats skipped over.
Aha. Well, I will just say that trying to rewrite history is a big authoritarian maneuver.
Yes, it is.
Authoritarianism 101.
Authoritarians are us. All right. So I will look forward to that. Though, as I say, I don't know that Republicans or Donald Trump actually will, even though they think they will for some reason. But I don't know that it's going to work out well. As long as any Democrat is actually seated on that committee, it's difficult to fathom how this does not come off very poorly for Trump himself. But we'll see. You go for it, kids. Hey, we've got some election results to report today, believe it or not. In yesterday, we had discussed the special election last week for state senate in a ruby red Iowa legislative district that had voted for Donald Trump last November by 11 points. And that last week, the Democratic candidate for that state senate seat in the special election actually defeated her Republican opponent in that same district by a similar 11 points. That was a 22-point swing for Democrats in a very Republican district in what has for many years now been a very Republican state. The election of Caitlin Dre in Iowa also ended the Republican supermajority in the upper chamber of the state Senate. All another very good sign, as we noted, for Democrats as they head into the next year's midterm elections, as they have been winning and or picking up vote share as compared to last year's presidential election in special election after special election during the 7 months since Trump took office. Well, there were more special elections on Tuesday of this week, this time in the otherwise former swing state, now turned red state, of Florida. Now, these were contests that were in already very Democratic districts. One was a state house district where Kamala Harris won by 35 points last year. The other, a Florida state Senate district that Harris won by 23 points last year. But on Tuesday night, this week, yet again, in a pattern that we've seen over and over and over over the past 7 months, Democrats massively outperformed as compared to last November. In Florida House District 40 on Tuesday, where Harris won last year by 35 points, the Democratic candidate in the House special, Rashawn Young, reportedly won by 50 points. 75 to 25 over her opponent. That is a 15-point swing for Democrats. In Florida State Senate District 15, where Harris defeated Trump by 23 points last November, Democrat LaVon Bracey Davis defeated her Republican opponent by 45 points, 73 to 27. That's a 22-point swing in the Democrats' favor. Yet again, we have seen this in election after election this year with these huge vote swings, like, you know, 20 or more points in many cases toward the Democratic candidate, whether the whether it's a seat, you know, that was held by a Republican or a Democrat, et cetera. And, you know, in many cases, the Democrat may not even win, but we see their vote share have a huge swing in their favor. Thomas Whalen of Boston University was quoted by Newsweek commenting on the Florida contests on Tuesday, saying, quote, "It's certainly a cause for concern for Republicans. You can't get much redder than the Sunshine State. And with the GOP increasing their registered voter numbers there," that's what they supposedly claim. He says, "This should not happen unless there's a deep undercurrent of dissatisfaction with the Trump administration, especially their take from the poor and give to the rich economic policies." Yes, that does now seem to be the case in, you know, from Florida to Iowa to everywhere else. So if Republicans are not freaked out by this, frankly, they are either not paying attention or they are in denial or they are otherwise hoping that they can steal their way out of losing the U.S. House majority next year, which, of course, is what all of the GOP partisan gerrymandering is currently about, with efforts in Texas to steal five seats, an effort underway to try to steal another one in Missouri. It's an effort to steal U.S. House seats from Democrats next year because they apparently feel they're going to lose the House, and they have good reason to believe that, it seems.
Yeah, these election results have suggested there's a great deal of pent-up voter enthusiasm.
You know, on the other hand, they could, I know it's a crazy idea, but they could change their policy positions to ones that American voters actually like. Just a thought. I know it would be too obvious, and it would, frankly, it would tick off their corporate funders, who are the ones that they are really actually working for, certainly not for actual voters. Finally, speaking of Trump, his attempted corruption of elections and his revenge against those who dare to oppose him, which we will discuss with Michael Hiltzik in a moment. On Tuesday, Trump held an Oval Office announcement, essentially to prove that he was not dead or overtly ill, as many had speculated over the prior few days when he had zero media appearances for about 3 days in a row, and then a long holiday weekend with nothing on his official White House calendar, which is very unusual for him. But the official reason for the White House press avail on Tuesday was to announce that Trump was moving Space Command back to Alabama from Colorado, where it had been moved by Joe Biden. Now, the Secretary of Defense, Pete Hegseth, and others at this press avail at the Oval Office gave reasons why it made much more sense to have the Space Command down in Alabama instead of Colorado with other military central command HQs. The, you know, the state's Alabama's proximity to the Space Coast, etc. But then, after giving all of these reasons why they were doing it, Trump sort of gave away the game when he followed up by explaining his real reason for moving Space Command out of Colorado, which voted against him last year, and to Alabama, which voted overwhelmingly in his favor.
The problem I have with Colorado, one of the big problems, they do mail-in voting. They went to all mail-in voting, so they have automatically crooked elections. And we can't have that. When a state is for mail-in voting, that means they want dishonest elections, because that's what that means. So that played a big factor also.
Yeah, that was the entire factor. And it wasn't actually that they have mail-in voting. It was the fact that he lost. So sometimes Trump accidentally tells the truth. He's mad at Colorado because they didn't vote for him. But he has to make up that lie about mail-in voting in order to justify his revenge against them. Now, Kyle Clark, a fantastic local news anchor at NBC affiliate News 9 in Denver, Colorado, had his own take on what is going on here, which I really enjoyed, as I always enjoy everything that he does, and how the media, well, frankly, if they were more like him, might be reporting on Trump's announcement yesterday.
President Trump's decision to move Space Command headquarters out of Colorado is the latest example of the president's willingness to use the military for domestic political advantage. Here and across America, it's time that we are clear about what's happening. President Trump was clear. He's stripping Colorado of a military installation because Coloradans didn't vote for him, putting it in Alabama where people did vote for him. But today, Trump took it to another level. He's now linking military decision-making to his false claim that the 2020 election was rigged against him. That's a dangerous escalation. Trump says that Colorado, where he lost badly, has automatically crooked elections, echoing something that he says Russian President Vladimir Putin recently told him. But Trump isn't threatening retribution against the states with extensive mail-in voting where he won. U.S. Election Assistance Commission found that Trump won half of the states where at least 30% of the ballots were returned by mail. No retaliation for that mail-in voting. It's similar to how the president is deploying troops into blue state cities, saying he's fighting crime, while ignoring similar or higher crime rates in cities in red states. Today, just hours after a federal judge ruled that the Trump administration willfully broke the law by sending troops into Los Angeles, Trump warned Chicago, quote, "We're going in." Now, there's an argument that cities do need federal help to reduce violent crime. There's an argument that Space Command truly belongs in Alabama. But President Trump makes clear, in word and in deed, what this is really about for him. It's about using the military for his personal advantage in domestic politics. Trump has also made clear how to avoid that retaliation. Just vote for him. Vote for him, and your state cities won't be targeted with troop deployments. Vote for him and keep your military installations. If all of this was happening in another nation, we would not hesitate to describe it clearly. If it was Kazakhstan instead of Colorado, Caracas instead of Chicago, we would call it by name. It's authoritarianism.
Yes, it is. and it is not coming. It is here. That's Kyle Clark, local news anchor in Denver on NBC affiliate News 9. Authoritarianism is here. The courts, the lower courts anyway, continue to push back against it. On Wednesday, a court ruled that no, the Trump administration cannot withhold $2 billion in grants to Harvard because he just doesn't like what he believes to be their politics. No, a federal judge ruled on Tuesday, Trump may not deploy U.S. military troops in Los Angeles if they're going to be used in domestic law enforcement, as it's a violation of the Posse Comitatus Act. And that same reasoning should prevent him from lawfully deploying troops to help with domestic law enforcement in places like D.C. or Chicago or any of those other blue cities that he has promised to invade with federal troops. No, Trump may not use the Alien Enemies Act to deport hundreds of migrants, since the act mandates that those migrants must be from countries that are actually invading us or part of some official incursion by another government, as the courts have ruled. Whether any of that holds up when these cases get to the corrupted Supreme Court, well, that's a separate question. But for now, Trump is losing in case after case in the courts, and he is losing in election after election at the polls. But none of that, so far anyway, appears to be keeping him from attempting to use the apparatus of the federal government that he has seized control of for revenge against his political enemies, including at the Federal Reserve. Yes, if it was happening in any other nation on earth, the U.S. media and all of us would call it for what it is, authoritarianism, and it is not coming, but it is here. That said, none of that means that we cannot continue to push back against it, and in fact, we will continue to do so. To that end, let's take a quick break here, and when we come back, we'll be joined by Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Michael Hiltzik on how Trump is abusing his access to the personal financial information of his perceived enemies and using that information against them, even if that may not work either. That's straight ahead on today's broadcast. I'm Brad Friedman.
Hey, this is Desi. The Bradcast and the Green News Report survive thanks to you and your support. Please drop by bradblog.com/donate today to help us stay independent every day over your public airwaves. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
Mac, it's the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. So you may recall back in July when Donald Trump criticized President Joe Biden for appointing Jerome Powell to head up the Federal Reserve. He was, of course, angry at Powell at the time for the fact that the Fed had been very cautious about lowering interest rates following years of inflation. Lowering interest rates by the Fed tends to encourage rather than discourage inflation, even though it can spark a rally on the stock market and spending in the economy itself. But his criticism of Powell and Biden for appointing him as Fed chair was largely laughed at the time, since it was actually Trump himself, not Joe Biden, who originally appointed Jerome Powell as Fed chair back during Trump's first term in 2017. President Biden reappointed Powell to a second term in 2022. But Trump's anger at Jerome Powell, particularly in the wake of the stock market diving earlier this year in direct response to Trump's so-called Liberation Day tariffs that were announced in April against imports to the U.S. from pretty much every nation in the world other than Russia. Well, of course, that anger against Powell would continue as the Fed continued its conservative hold on lowering interest rates until the full effect of Trump's tariffs could become known. But of course, since Trump can never admit that he is wrong about anything, he continued his campaign against Powell, who he threatened to fire as Fed chair. But unlike others in the government following Trump's return to office for a second time, Powell seemed to laugh off Trump's firing threats, making clear that he believed the president had no such authority to fire the head of the independent Federal Reserve unless there was cause, such as malfeasance of some type. Trump tried to create the appearance of malfeasance by claiming that Powell had somehow mismanaged an ongoing remodeling of the Federal Reserve building in D.C., though that effort to find something, anything, to use against Powell was also largely laughed off as well. But then Trump found something that he thought he could use, if not against Powell himself, then against a member of the Federal Reserve Board, the Federal Reserve Governor, Lisa Cook, who was appointed to the board by President Biden as the first black woman in the nation's history to serve as a Federal Reserve governor. She had served as a deputy treasury secretary during the Obama administration. But she also cannot be fired as governor of the Federal Reserve by a president without cause, according to law. So the administration appears to have tried to cook up a justification to fire Cook by claiming that she had committed mortgage fraud. Now, the allegations appear to have begun with Trump's appointee, Bill Pulte, who previously ran a major national home builder before he was tapped to head up the Federal Housing Finance Agency, or FHFA, which oversees Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, the quasi-governmental agencies that backstop the vast majority of home mortgages in the country. Pulte, who spends much of his time online as a MAGA influencer on social media, publicly announced via Twitter that he had discovered that Cook had committed mortgage fraud and that as the head of the FHFA, he was making a criminal referral against her to the Department of Justice, which is now supposedly investigating the matter. But before any evidence has been released to support Pulte's claims, much less before any indictment of Cook, much less before any conviction of Cook, Donald Trump used Pulte's allegations to fire the Federal Reserve governor last week, or at least try to, via social media, where he posted a formal letter claiming that she was, quote, removed from her position effective immediately, marking what would be the first time in U.S. history that a president has tried to dismiss a sitting Fed governor since the Fed's creation, going way back to 1913. But like Powell before her, Cook did not roll over for Trump. Just days after her purported firing last week, Cook filed suit in U.S. District Court in Washington, D.C., arguing that Trump's action was, quote, illegal and unprecedented, a violation of the Federal Reserve Act, which only allows removal of governors for cause, and a threat to the Fed's independence, which is designed to insulate monetary policy from political pressure. Her legal team asked the court to declare Trump's firing attempt as unlawful and void and to block Fed Chair Powell from enforcing what they see as an unlawful termination, after which Cook stated, quote, President Trump purported to fire me for cause when no cause exists under the law and he has no authority to do so. I will not resign, she said, making clear that she had no prior knowledge of the mortgage fraud allegations cited by Trump or by his FHFA chief, Bill Pulte. But that has not stopped Pulte from continuing his public claims against Cook, as he apparently filed a second complaint recently against Cook. Pulte, who spends much of his time, as I noted, as a MAGA influencer on social media, he appeared on Tuesday on the show of Trump's Fox News sycophant, or at least one of them, Maria Bartiromo, to continue the pressure campaign on Cook.
Why a second criminal referral?
Well, as you know, mortgage fraud is a huge priority of ours. It's been a huge priority, contrary to what Democrats and everybody wants to say, since March. And it doesn't matter whether you're a Republican or a Democrat. If you commit mortgage fraud in this country, we're going to come after you. And in the case of Ms. Cook, it appears that she has committed blatant mortgage fraud. And we can't be having somebody like that in the Federal Reserve. So it will be up to the DOJ what they end up doing here. But things do not look very good for Ms. Cook.
Well, can we have someone like that as president of the United States, given that Trump was actually convicted of mortgage fraud? Now, as bizarre as this whole story is, it's even more bizarre than that. The allegations against Cook come on the heels of two other allegations of, yes, mortgage fraud against longtime perceived political enemies of Donald Trump. Those claims and similar calls for criminal prosecution came against New York Attorney General Letitia James, another powerful black woman in public office, and the one who won a $500 million civil fraud suit against Trump, his company, and his executives, including Trump's two eldest sons, Eric and John Jr., just last year. And similar calls and claims of fraud against California U.S. Senator Adam Schiff, who led both Trump's second impeachment for inciting the January 6th insurrection at the U.S. Capitol and sat on the bipartisan House committee that led an incriminating public investigation into the matter in Congress. So what does all of this mean? Is it even possible that suddenly all of Trump's perceived political enemies have been committing mortgage fraud, which, by the way, Letitia James' civil suit actually found that Trump himself was guilty of, and that we are only learning about all of these cases now? And beyond the political reasons for all of this, where is all of this evidence supposedly coming from if it actually exists in the first place? Evidence that these public servants who stood up to Trump actually committed fraud, in some cases, years and years ago, apparently. LA Times Pulitzer Prize-winning business columnist Michael Hiltzik was recently wondering the very same thing, as he wrote last week in his column that, like the White Queen in Lewis Carroll's Through the Looking Glass, he was, quote, capable of believing as many as six impossible things before breakfast, but that his, quote, credulity is strained past the breaking point by the charges of federal mortgage fraud laid against three leading adversaries of Donald Trump. Joining us now is Michael Hiltzik, longtime financial and political writer and investigative reporter and author of too many books to mention here, many of them focused on the great American robber barons and industrial titans of the 19th and 20th centuries. Oh, Mr. Hiltzik, welcome back to the broadcast, sir.
Well, thanks, Brad. It's good to be back with you.
Clearly, it seems that all of these sudden claims about, in some cases, years-old mortgage fraud, at least as far as we understand the allegations, that they're all emanating from Pulte, Trump's chief of the FHFA, which most Americans have likely never heard of. So first off, what is the Federal Housing Finance Agency exactly? And what is the job of the of its director supposed to be?
Well, its job is basically, what it says there. It's sort of the oversight agency mm-hmm. for Fannie and Freddie, which are sort of pseudo-government mortgage holding companies and marketing companies. First of all, I just want to say that this is the most transparent act of political retribution that I have ever seen. And I've been, at this for a long time. And it's not only that, it's also the most absurd. If you look at what Pulte has actually put on the record about all three of these cases, it's so flimsy you just wanna, laugh. He has no grounds to allege criminal wrongdoing, and in fact, so far the Department of Justice hasn't, followed through. Although, quite likely may. He hasn't produced documents that show any sort of fraud whatsoever in any of these three cases. And you want to look at sort of the absurdity of the process here, if I can take a moment to do that.
Sure.
Bill Pulte, scion of, a multi-generational home building family, now is the director of the Federal Housing Finance Agency. He's also the chairman of Fannie and Freddie.
He's in charge of the agency that is supposed to be overseeing those two agencies, which he is also in charge of?
Yes.
Okay.
All right. But it gets worse.
Okay.
It actually gets worse. So one day over at Fannie and Freddie, they get an email or a communication of some sort from the FHFA. So Fannie and Freddie, of which the chair is Bill Pulte, gets an email from the FHFA, of which the director is Pulte, and the email or the communication says, "We want you to go into your files and pull any document related to Adam Schiff."
Okay.
And then, and we know this because we actually have the memo that Freddie Mac sent back later. Okay. So, but he says, you know, the FHFA, you know, of Bill Pulte says to the Fannie Mae of Bill Pulte and says, go into your files, which are otherwise private, and pull out every document you can see related to Adam Schiff and send it over. So Freddie Mac, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, does this, send a memo. So, you know, Fannie Mae, of which the chairman is Bill Pulte, sends a memo to the FHFA, of which the director is Bill Pulte, and it says, well, we did what you asked, and we found that there were these five mortgages on two properties, residential properties. And, you know, they all say that these both are his primary residence, but that can't be because you can't be in two places at once. But this is wrong, by the way, that you can actually do two primary residences. Uh-huh. And but then the memo also says, and by the way, all five of these mortgages have been paid off.
Okay, so yeah.
So what we have here, is, you know, and it's Adam Levithan of Georgetown Law, real estate lawyer, who I quoted in this piece, says nobody ever goes back and looks at the occupancy status on mortgages that have been paid off that or are performing.
Right.
It costs too much and you get nothing for it. So they did that. And so, you know, the absurdity of this is there's no allegation anywhere here that any of these mortgages that Pulte says, oh my God, not, you know, Schiff's, James's, Cook's, were, you know, were ever unpaid, were ever impaired, were ever late by even a month. Nothing, because, you know, if they found something like that, that would be the headline.
Well, let me be fair here. Donald Trump's fraud case, he sort of made the same argument. Hey, sure, we might have lied about all kinds of things and the value of my properties and, you know, claiming that my penthouse in New York was three times larger than it actually was. But we paid off all of the loans. None of the banks are complaining. There is no broken law here. How is your defense of Schiff in this case any different than Trump's?
The difference is that the case against Trump, which Trump lost, alleged a conspiracy to defraud the banks. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and the fact that the bank said, well, we're all right about it, it's nothing to do with it. But, you know, they have documents, actual documents showing what they alleged was fraud. And mm-hmm. and the government won that case. And that was, as you said, the penalty the judge imposed originally was like $800 million. Mm-hmm. You know, these mortgages that Pulte is blowing hot and cold smoke about, they're for like, you know, maybe a couple, $200,000 or $300,000. I mean, this, you know, and it's just, listen to this, you say, this is just, you know.
You detail a number of these allegations against Schiff and Cook and James. Some of them, in the case of Letitia James, goes back to 19. One of them goes back to 1983, when her father referred to her once as his wife in the documents, not as his daughter. In one page of the application,
that wasn't even right, and that wasn't even, you know, her mortgage. But in any case, when you point that out, a lot of the mortgages that Pulte is dragging out here Even if there were fraud, the statute of limitations has expired. So there's no criminal case. But in any event, the allegations point to actually zero, you know, no fraud, no, you know. You know, when I first wrote about this, you know, I quoted the head of the Mortgage Bankers Association, saying, well, mortgage, you know, documents for mortgages, they've gotten completely out of control. They can be 300 pages, 500 pages. I mean, anyone who's closed on a house with a mortgage mm-hmm. knows how excruciating the closing is. You know, sign a million documents. You know, you're not going to read them all. And if one says spouse rather than daughter, you know, it costs nobody. It's no scam, for God's sake. You know.
So is it plausible, Michael Hiltzik, that these three perceived opponents of Trump would all suddenly be found to have committed essentially the same crime all of these years later via some random auditing mechanism at the FHFA? Or can we assume, like the letter you saw?
We know it isn't random because we have the memo that Pulte sent to Pulte saying, go into your files, Chairman, and find everything you have on this borrower. It didn't say, borrowers of these characteristics. No, it's just not. I mean, you want to say it doesn't pass a smell test, but, it's beyond that. It's like, there's a famous physicist who was reading a student's paper, and it was so off base that he gave it back to the student and said, "This, it isn't even wrong. it's beyond wrong." And these allegations, these cases are beyond absurdity.
Now, you in your reporting, you sought comment on all of this from the FHFA, seeking info on why these files were pulled in the first place and whether Pulte played a direct role in that. Did they respond to you in any way? If so, what was their response?
No, they didn't respond at all. I didn't get a reply at all.
Shortly after announcing that he was calling for this DOJ investigation of Cook, he took to social media, Pulte did, to declare, quote, "Cook is cooked." And of course, you heard the claims that he made, I think it was yesterday, along those lines on Fox News, that she's in big trouble. Michael, even if the allegations against Cook in this case were actually true and supported by evidence, is it appropriate or even heard of for a director of the FHFA to make such statements, public statements, against someone who has not been charged with anything at all?
Right. Well, let me make two points here. The first is that, something you just said sort of demonstrates that they got what they wanted with this campaign against Cook. And that's because he said, well, even if she was, mm-hmm. even if she had committed fraud, that's, for them, that's the money shot, and everyone I've talked to, my friends, my colleagues, mm-hmm. editors, says, well, what if it was fraud? I'm not going there. It was not. I don't accept that. Mm. And to accept it sort of gives them, the battle. Mm. Maybe not the war, but, mm-hmm. gives them a victory. Now, the other thing is, Pulte doing, going on social media and saying this stuff, he should be impeached. I mean, or he should be forced to resign because this is, first of all, looking at the circumstantial evidence that he's maintaining an enemies list and going after Trump's enemies, leave that aside, Lisa Cook is Cook. Then this latest accusation about her Cambridge apartment from yesterday and the day before, every bit as transparent and stupid as the others. And he puts out a tweet saying, third time, three strikes, you're out. you can't, you know, you can't have the government convicting somebody like this.
Uh-huh.
It's, I think, you know, lawyers must be, their heads must be exploding, and I'm not a lawyer, but.
And that would be true.
I've never seen anything like this.
And that would be true, even if that was the DOJ filing an actual indictment. It would still be inappropriate, it seems to me, for the attorney general or somebody like that to go out on social media and say things like "Cook is cooked."
Yes.
I mean, you wouldn't see that from anyone, even at the DOJ, much less a guy who is making a criminal complaint, not an indictment or anything else. As I understand it, Michael.
Actually, it wasn't. Yeah. I think to be absolutely, because this may be not a trivial issue. He didn't issue a complaint. He issued a referral. He basically said to the DOJ, you know, here's what we know about it. And maybe you want to take a look at it. So it was not even close to. I mean, he on X, he's complained, you know, but. And his actual referral, it's so far from actually being validated that it's, you know, it's.
I know. It's
he's speechless that they are trying this. And, you know, and Lisa Cook has, you know, I mean, you know, you read the replies to, you know, to tweets about this stuff on X, and I, you know, look at the comments on my column, and there's a whole cadre of people out there who basically assume, yeah, she's guilty, or they're guilty.
Just from the allegations, just that's all they needed to hear.
Well, less than the allegations. I mean, just the, basically the, any rhetoric that says there's something bad going on here, you know, is... it's got MAGA in vibrating to a higher.
Michael, as I understand it, one of the reforms after Watergate had prevented an IRS chief from specifically singling out any, you know, one target for retribution or an audit or et cetera, an enemy of the president, et cetera, as Nixon was accused of. Are there similar rules that you know of or laws in place to prevent that sort of thing from happening at FHFA and Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac and so forth?
I don't know, but I would assume that, I mean, I would hope that any strictures that were put on the IRS at that time, you know, were applied in the law to, you know, any federal agency that has access to private information.
Because that's kind of what it seems like here. It seems like if anyone is violating the law, it might be Pulte going in and targeting individual people, individual mortgages for claims, no?
I think it's quite possible. I mean, keep your eye on, you know, what's going on here. The latest thing that Cook did through her lawyer, Abby Lowell, who actually was a high school classmate of my younger brother.
Oh, really?
But you know, we haven't talked, you know, for probably 47 years. Anyway, basically, the last thing that they filed was basically a request for an injunction, which I believe will be heard by the judge, an emergency injunction, which I believe will be heard by the judge on Friday.
Uh-huh.
And in it, you know, because some of the language, you know, in their earlier filing sounded like, you know, Lowell was sort of talking conditionally that maybe, you know, there were mistakes on the documents and stuff. But this, in this one, he says she did not ever commit mortgage fraud. So, but anyway, so that's part of it. Now, once they get the injunction, you know, assuming they do,
mm-hmm.
hope they do, I think, you know, I would not be at all surprised to see them go after Pulte because, you know, he's, I mean, his behavior demonstrates that this is not a genuine cause to fire him.
When you say go after, you're saying go at the, in a civil lawsuit against him, because really,
well, I mean, they have a civil lawsuit now, and
right.
And as the civil lawsuit, you know, unfolds, look to see if they actually make Pulte, you know, a target, or, you know, the personification of the proof that this whole thing was bullshit.
And I know you're not a lawyer, neither am I, but I mean, in a case like this, if it was found to be just simply unlawful for Pulte to do what he is doing, who would be the one to go after him? It would be the federal government, no? The DOJ? I mean, how could there be accountability for this guy in the first place, at least as long as Donald Trump is still in office?
Well, Congress has to get involved, and this Congress, you know, obviously will not, but, you know, if there's retribution to be had down the line, you know, he should be on the list.
Is it a coincidence, yeah. Michael? I've got just a few more minutes.
But
here.
It's out of his hands now. You know, he's referred this to the DOJ, and you know, you can smear Pulte. I mean, smear him accurately, and it won't affect what the DOJ does. And the ball is now in their court.
Right. Is it a coincidence, in your opinion, Michael Hiltzik, that Trump is lashing out against his political enemies by citing, in these cases, financial fraud, which he himself was found guilty of, and then in the case of his former national security advisor turned Trump critic, John Bolton, just last week, that he saw his home raided by the FBI supposedly for having classified material at his home, which is something Trump knows a thing or two about because he was federally indicted for exactly that. Is there any, is it even feasible that this could possibly be a coincidence that he's going after his enemies for specifically the crimes that he was charged with?
Well, you're asking me to go into a deep, dark place that I would be afraid that I would ever escape. And that is, what is Donald Trump thinking? I don't know. All we can do is... You know, Ida Tarbell, you know, the great muckraker, who I've been thinking about lately, wrote about the Standard Oil Trust, you know, the Rockefeller Trust. She wrote something to the effect that you could not prove its existence. You could only sort of posit it from its effects. You know, you know, the trust had no, you know, tangible existence, but, you know, you could see it going. So I don't know, you know, the only way to judge Trump is to look at the effects, and the effects have been disastrous on everything he's touched thus far.
Last question, where you may have to stay in that deep, dark place, Michael. It's expected that the Fed will be finally lowering interest rates at least somewhat following its next meeting this month, I believe. They're talking about a quarter or 25 basis points or something. Not as much as I suspect Donald Trump would like them to lower interest rates. But do you suppose that that will cause Trump to, once they do lower rates a little bit, that that's going to cause him to lay off his attacks against Powell and Cook and the Fed in general?
No, because I don't think this is really about this round of rate cutting. I think Trump wants to control the Fed for whatever reasons, you know, because, you know, Fed decision making can affect, you know, fixed income, real estate businesses, you know, mm-hmm. which, you know, crypto maybe. Mm-hmm. So, the fact that, you know, this thing intensified at a point when there was general agreement that the Fed is going to lower rates I think 2 weeks at its next meeting of its Open Market Committee, you know, and that's no one knows if it'll be a quarter point or a half a point, you know, but it'll probably be something. And in fact, the economy may look worse by then than it does now, and it doesn't look too healthy now. So they might be even more inclined to lower rates in September.
I think that it seems to me, he, as much as he might want to control the board, I think an argument could be made that He doesn't actually want to control the board. He just wants to complain about the fact that he doesn't control the board. And that way, when we saw, like in April, when the stock market went in the toilet, as the economy continues to slow, as you suggest, well, he's got something to complain about. It's not his fault. It's all the Fed.
I think you're treating him as though he's some guy who plays nine-dimensional chess. That's not who he is. You know, I don't think he's that Machiavellian. You know, I don't think he thinks ahead in that distance. No. I think what you see is what you get.
Hey, gotcha. And I don't like what we get. In any event, Michael Hiltzik, his column on all of this is why are all these leading Democrats suddenly facing mortgage fraud charges? Guess who's behind it? That's at the LA Times. We will, of course, link to that. You can find Michael on the Blue Skies now at Hiltzik M. And, of course, his own website where you can find all his books, of which he has many, at michaelhiltzik.com. He is the Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist and business columnist at the LA Times. Michael, always great speaking with you, my friend. Thank you for taking some time for us, even while you're on vacation, sir.
Okay, anytime, Brad. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you. Okay, well, there you have it.
I will say one small thing. That I think that while Mike has a good point that Trump probably doesn't have that kind of foresight or far ahead planning, but I think that people smarter than Trump that are surrounding him who stand to profit from his policies, they understand that before the consequences of Trump's policies hit the fan, he needs the Fed to lower rates to mask those impacts. Because, you know, you can put a sugar rush onto the economy.
Right.
And then it will it'll appear like everything is just fine for just long enough.
Well, I would also say if there's one thing that Trump is good at, it's making excuses for himself.
True.
So all the stuff you're seeing with the elections right now, how mail-in ballots cannot possibly be, anything but corrupt.
Pre-excuses.
Exactly. Pre-excuse. So he'll have a pre-excuse so long as the Fed does not lower their rates as much as, you know, Trump wants it lowered like by 3 points or some ridiculous number. So as long as the Fed does not do what he wants, then as long as everything goes south,
he can blame them.
He can blame someone else.
I think it's probably a mix of everything.
Yeah. All of the above. All right, we got to get out. Thanks again to Michael Hiltzik. Thanks to our producer, Desi Doyen, and to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's show or any other we have ever done since the beginning of time, they are all free for you. No paywall at bradblog.com. Thanks to those of you who consider hitting a donate button when you stop by. Brad, or you can go straight to bradblog.com/donate. Yes, please help us stay on your public airwaves. Drop me email if you like. I'm bradcast@bradblog.com. And on the social medias, especially Blue Sky, I am The Brad Blog. We will see you at all of the above. Until we see you here next time, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world. All the glitters isn't gold.
All the glitters isn't gold. You're listening to The Bradcast. We are 100% listener-supported, thanks to listeners like you who drop by bradblog.com/donate.